Morning. Today's daf in Baba Kama's daf pay. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is on the Zechon Nishmas Libra Viel Bashmo. We are on the Mishnah on the very bottom of Ayin Testament Beis. The Mishnah continues discussion of Geneva. Here we're going to be discussing it on a more communal level. Up until now, the seventh parak has begun. We talked about issues of Geneva of Gzela, theft. It's prohibited. I think it's been established already for the last 2 weeks. I talked about the various knasos that the Torah imposes when a person steals and a person compounds his error by stealing and then shechting the animal, or stealing and then selling the animal. We move on in the Mishnah now to basically communal takanos, institutions that were made for the community in order to ensure that we do not steal from one another. The Mishnah begins. You can't raise small animals in Eretz Yisrael. Now that is some serious takana. That is an agriculturally based society is not allowed to raise small animals. Small animals meaning sheep and goat. So you're not allowed to raise them in Eretz Yisrael. If you take a look at the first Rashi in the Mishnah, Rashi explains what's the basis of this takana. Mishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael Shemavir Sasados V'chol Sados Eretz Yisrael Stamam D'Yisrael. So Rashi says that they're basically destructive animals, destructive meaning to the land. They go and they consume the land. And they're going to go into other people's property and consume their property as well. And Rashi points out that, generally speaking, when you're living in Eretz Yisrael, your neighbor is probably going to be a Jew. And so that means that ultimately what's going to end up happening is that your animal is going to steal from another Jew. So it was so common, it was so ubiquitous, that the Chachamim made a general takana that you're not allowed to raise these animals in Eretz Yisrael. Now, it's not absolute, it's not unilateral. The Mishnah then goes on to say, there are geographic locations where you're allowed to raise these animals. If you're in Syria, so you're allowed to raise the animal in Syria. Syria we've discussed time and again throughout the Gemara. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi points out that Syria also goes by the name of Aron Sova. David conquered Syria. It is not considered a properly annexed part of Eretz Yisrael. Rashi goes on to say, "V'havi kichutz Eretz," says, so therefore, since its annexation was not done by Klal Yisrael, it was done by an act of war that was declared only by David HaMelech. So therefore, it's not properly annexed, and therefore, it's not proper. It's not Eretz Yisrael proper. Rashi goes on to say, "V'havi kichutz Eretz, v'chutz Eretz mutal gadol de lo chayshinan liyishuv v'imafsidu sados achem yishal menu." So and therefore what? Therefore, this takana was only proper to Eretz Yisrael. This takana didn't apply to outside Eretz Yisrael. If your animal goes into your neighbor's property outside Eretz Yisrael and consumes their property, okay, you pay. But there wasn't this this general takana that you're not allowed to raise the animals. So, if you are in Syria, so you can have these small animals. If you are, let's say, even in Eretz Yisrael, but you're Bemidbar. In other words, you're not in a populated area. You're not by your you're not near your neighbor. So therefore, again, a dispensation, you're allowed to raise animals in such a place. You're not allowed to raise chickens in Yerushalayim. Chickens in Yerushalayim, what's the problem? So the Mishnah says very succinctly that it's an issue of kachim. Rashi, once again, we turn to Rashi. Rashi explains what is the Mishnah, what's this gzera based on? So basically, chickens are tumma carriers. You take a look at Rashi. So we know that in Yerushalayim, a lot of karbanos are eaten, even within the perimeter of Yerushalayim. Obviously, the animal shechted in the Beis HaMikdash itself. But in terms of where you can eat the carbon shlamim, could be eaten throughout Yerushalayim. Problem now becomes v'derech tanegom l'naker ba'ashba shemi aviyu etzim kadashim and asheret v'it musa hakadashim. Chickens are indiscriminate in terms of where they eat and what they eat. And Rashi points out that what can end up happening is that they're going to peck on a sheretz that's on the ground. A sheretz is obviously a ava tumma, it's a source of tumma. When the chicken gets a part of the sheretz in its mouth, and even though it's not that big, it's the size of a lentil, it's a kadasha, that's still going to be enough of sheretz in order to transmit tumma. That's still going to be an ava tumma. And therefore, when the chicken then moves and runs across Yerushalayim, so therefore it's going to be spreading its tumma from one location to another. So therefore, in Yerushalayim, where we want to be extraordinarily careful that it's a tumma-free environment, so therefore no chickens are allowed to be in Yerushalayim because they are tumma carriers. and throughout the rest of Eretz Yisrael, so the Kohanim are not allowed to raise chickens because, once again, they're eating truma. Now, truma is kache gvul, meaning it's not a carbon, but it's kachim. It has, once again, that heightened element of kedusha. If truma were to come into contact with truma, the truma will become tame, and the Kohen can't eat it. So, therefore, for Kohanim, they also have to be careful that they're living in a truma-free environment. So, therefore, they can't have chickens there as well. Back to the Mishnah. Ein Megadlin Chazir Mechol Makom. Can't raise pigs. Not allowed to raise pigs, and this is not specific to Eretz Yisrael. This is Bechol Makom, this is everywhere. The Gemara is going to discuss this more in depth. Loi Gadol Adam Azakelavim Ela Imkenaya Kasher Bishal Shelis. Okay, you want a dog? That's wonderful. Very happy for you. Actually, I like dogs. I'm on the side of a dog liker, a dog lover. But you want to raise a dog, so you have to have it leashed, says the Mishnah. Ein porsin yishuvim liyonim. You can't set up traps for birds. Elim kein ayarachuk min yishuv lamed ris. Unless you are away from settled area. Rashi explains, and we're going to be discussing this more also later as well, is that the birds seem to wander, and if you set up a trap, you may end up capturing your neighbor's bird. And we discussed this back in Gittin, the fifth perek, certain things that were instituted for darchei shalom. So one of them is that you shouldn't take birds that belong to your neighbors. So even though we could make an argument that technically a bird does not belong to your neighbor, meaning your neighbor only set up a birdhouse, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's his, but still, the halacha is going to treat it as if the bird belongs to your neighbor, so therefore you cannot set up a trap in proximity to your neighbor's property. It will lead to discord between you and your neighbor. Okay, a lot of takanas that are mentioned in the Mishnah, we're going to be focusing a lot today on the first takana of the Mishnah, and that is raising small animals in Eretz Yisrael. So our Mishnah introduced us to this idea that in Eretz Yisrael, so you're not allowed to raise small animals in Eretz Yisrael, they graze a lot, and it's going to result in a lot of theft. And because of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, so therefore you're not allowed to raise these animals in Eretz Yisrael. Tanur Rabbanim, the Gemara starts us off with a brisa. Ein megalim mehema daka b'Eretz Yisrael, v'megalim mechorshin shebe Eretz Yisrael, b'Suria afilo b'Yishuv. So the brisa over here, basically repetition of what we saw back in the Mishnah, is that you're not allowed to raise small animals in Eretz Yisrael if you're in the Choresh. Choresh in this case means a forest, meaning an unsettled area of Eretz Yisrael. There you're allowed to raise these small animals. You don't have to worry about the animals encroaching onto your neighbor's property. In Syria, it's allowed. Again, we point this out in the Mishnah as well. And in Chutz La'aretz, of course, it's allowed. Tan Yidach, the Gemara quotes another brisa, Megalim Mehema Daka b'Eretz Yisrael, Ava Megalim Midbar Shebi Yehuda. So again, the brisa over here, the second brisa of the Gemara, very similar. You're allowed to raise these animals in the desert, over Midbar Shebisfar Akko. And similarly, in the town of Akko, as long as you're in the unsettled area, the Afa Bishamar Megalim Mehema Daka, Ava Megalim Mehema Gasa. Now, small animals you're not allowed to raise, but large animals you are. Why? The Gemara goes on to explain. The Brisa goes on to explain. Lefisha in gozum gzeil atzibar ela im kein rov tzibar yicholam la'amod ba. Because remember, all this is a gzeira derabanan. The rabbis legislate. Now the chachamim legislate, But there may be very good reasons for them to legislate, but their legislation has to be tolerable. If it's a legislation that is intolerable just simply means that it's onerous. It's too much for us to bear. So then the Chachamim understand that, and they back off from that kind of legislation. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah gives a couple of examples of this. Our Gemara over here also is speaking now to this idea. Large animals is a necessary component of society. And the meat, the milk, the fact that it works, it's just a necessary component of society. In other words, you could have made an argument that they also graze on other people's properties, but it's too overbearing for them, for the Chachamim, to legislate no large animals. Be'emadaka ev shalavi mechutz aretz. Be'emagasa ev shalavi mechutz aretz. And then the Braisa goes on to explain, look, when it comes to this legislation over small animals, you can always import small animals into Eretz Yisrael. But the large animals are very difficult to import, so therefore the Chachamim waived the legislation and they allowed for the raising of large animals in Eretz Yisrael. The Alpha Pisha Amrei Megalim Behem Adakava Mashahu Kodem Laregel Shloshim Yom. The Kodem Mishne Beno Lamed Yom. Then the Braisa goes on to say, but look, there are going to be times during the year where it is understandable that there will be a high demand for small animals. In such a circumstance where there's a high demand for small animals, there's going to be a 30-day dispensation where during the 30-day dispensation, before Yontif, one is allowed to have surplus of small animals in order to sell. 30 days before Yontif and 30 days before a Chasna. So there's going to be a high demand for these animals, and so therefore a dispensation is made. Uvelvad shelo yisha es ha'achrona shloshim yom. So the Braisa says, but what you can't do is you can't hold on to animal for 30 days, meaning that the 30-day dispensation is a window that allows people to have surplus animals, but don't focus on the number 30. Meaning, don't say to yourself, well, it's a 30-day dispensation, therefore I can buy the animal and hold on to it for 30 days. Even though the 30-day period in which you're holding on to it goes well beyond Yontif. That's not the point. The point is that it's a window of opportunity from 30 days before Yontif up to Yontif, and that's it. And obviously the idea is that we need animals on Yontif. All of Klal Yisrael, especially Pesach. But all the other Yontifs as well. There are other carbonists to bring. All of Klal Yisrael need to bring carbonos on Yontif, or it's Aliyah L'Regel, and we're all going to bring carbonos, so therefore there's going to be a high demand of animals, and therefore a special dispensation that during that month before, people are allowed to have surplus animals. Salkadat Chamina, my best guess is that this is not part of the Braisa, as now the language has moved to Aramaic, so this is probably the Gemara's explanation now of the Braisa. Salkadat Chamina, Dinafik L'Regel, you might have thought that from the time that I purchased the animal, I'm now afforded this 30-day opportunity where I'm allowed to hold on to this animal for the next 30 days, even though that 30 days goes well beyond Yontif. So to that, the Gemara says, don't say that you're allowed to hold on to it for 30 days. But once Yontif comes and goes, you're no longer allowed to hold on to it. The idea is you're supposed to make use of it over Yontif. After Yontif is over, that's it. You shouldn't be holding on to it anymore. Then, from Yontif and onward, you are now in violation of the rabbinic decree of not raising small animals in Eretz Yisrael. We are on the top of Pei Amud Aleph. Vehatabach lokech v'shochet. Lokech v'shoheh. Now, as far as the butcher is concerned, so the butcher is in a position where he is the distributor for all these animals, meaning he's the one who is buying them from the supplier, distributing them, and so therefore, as far as the butcher is concerned, so he can hold on to these animals. So the butcher can buy, the butcher can shech, the butcher can hold on to it. But what you're not allowed to do is hold on to the aguna, right? It's a bar term for our Gemara over here. The aguna obviously is relevant to a woman who is stuck in, does not know the status of her husband, or her husband is just simply refusing her to give her a get. In this context, however, the Gemara is just simply borrowing the term, meaning the holdover animal, right? Rashi, third line down, Hamu'ucheres lamecho shalakach samach leis hashuk lo yisha oso lach yom hashuk la'ashlam shoshim lamecho. Again, it's the same idea, that even though the butcher has every right to take in a lot of animals, large animals and small animals, that's only up till Yontif. But beyond the point of Yontif, so once again, the butcher should be exhausting his surplus animals and in consideration of the Takana Durabanan, the Gzera Durabanan. Pei Amud Aleph, two dots, second line down. Shalu Tamidav is Rabbi Gamliel, Ma'al Gadel. So they asked Rabbi Gamliel the following question. Are you allowed to raise small animals in Eretz Yisrael? Now, again, we know the answer is no, meaning that's what we learned together in the Mishnah. So this give and take that's given to us in this Brice, it's the Tosefta. It's going to sound a little bit strange. Let's follow along. So Shalu Tamidav is Rabbi Gamliel, Ma'al Gadel. So are you allowed to raise these small animals in Eretz Yisrael? Amar Lahan, Mutter. So his response is, it's fine. So to which the Gemara immediately reacts, V'atanayne Megadlin. What do you mean? The Mishnah says you're not allowed to. Elahachi kabo minei. So the Gemara says is that obviously we got a version of the question, but obviously a faulty version of the question and answer. There was a question that was asked to Rabbi Gamliel. The Gemara now is going to tweak the question. Bal mine mal lashos. No. Question, of course, is not allowed. Are you allowed to raise? You're not allowed to raise. Are you allowed to hold? Are you allowed to buy and hold the animals? Meaning what we discussed previously in the Braisa of given this 30-day dispensation, are you allowed to hold the animals 30 days from the time that you purchase the animal? Amar lahem mutter. So his answer is that you're allowed to do. That's also controversial because we learned in the Braisa already a couple of times that no, you're not allowed to hold the animals 30 days from purchase. The 30-day window is only from 30 days before Yontif up to Yontif. But there is no dispensation for a 30-day hold on an animal. So Rabbi Gamliel, even in this new version of the question and answer, it's Rabbi Gamliel is making a controversial response. Uvavashalo teitiv etira be'eder. He says, yes, you're allowed to hold on to the animal. What you're not allowed to do is you're not allowed to allow the animal to graze. Ela kosher bekari amita. But here's what you do. If you're going to buy the animal and you want to hold on to it for 30 days from the time of purchase, so don't let it outside, tie to the leg of your bed, your bedpost, and it'll look a little bit like the Karban Pesach of now 3,300 years ago. And the Gemara says, and that's how you're going to be able to hold on to the animal for 30 days. Okay, this is Rabbi Gamliel's response, and as I just already pointed out, in of itself, his response is still controversial, not as controversial as originally presented, where he was simply saying, you're allowed to raise these animals in Eretz Yisrael. Right, a regular carbon, or in other words, for whatever your needs may be, just tied to the bed, just simply an expression meaning don't let it go outside. Because the whole reason behind the takana is that the animal is going to graze on your neighbor's property. So as long as you keep it indoors, so it's not going to graze on your neighbor's property. Tanu Rabbanan. Next, Brisa. Maisa b'chassid echa, there was a story with a chassid. Okay. Chassid over here, when it goes unidentified, so generally speaking, we have a Mesorah that there are a couple of candidates of who it could be. The most popular candidate, although the Gemara here does not mention it, and to be honest, Rashi doesn't mention it as well, so I hope I'm not giving any insider secrets, but probably it's Rav Yehuda ben Bava. Okay, and that's generally the likely candidate of when the Braisa describes a Chassid Echad, a particular Chassid. Rav Yehuda ben Bava, one of the students of Rabbi Akiva, right? One of the big five after the death of the 24,000. So he had some sort of what's the expression? I didn't have Brian with me this morning. When your heart is weak, it's fluttering. Okay. Vishalu lerofim. So he goes to the doctors. So he goes to the doctors, and the doctor said, you're going to need really, literally hot milk every morning. Hot milk meaning straight out of the body. So you got to get an animal and milk. And not just milk, but milk of a small animal. Okay, so goat milk. Okay, so cow milk would have been fine. Cow milk, cow is a large animal. There's no gzera d'rabbanan for the large animals. So what they told him is goat milk. So now, in order for him to have a refuah, so he's going to need a goat in his house. Now, there's a ban on small animals for Eretz Yisrael. The heavy low A's, the kashu low bekare amita. They brought him a goat and they tied it to his bedpost. So every morning now, he was drinking fresh milk straight from the goat. Now, his friends come in order to visit him. Biker cholim. It's a big mitzvah. And they are surprised as they walk into the house. They see a goat tied to his bed. It's a funny scene. But obviously, their reaction is going to be based on the fact that there is a rabbinic ban to have these animals on your property. When they see the goat tied to the bed, so they jump backwards. They reacted. And they said, this man has a robber in his house, referring to the goat as a robber. And again, the idea is that the whole enactment is based on the fact that these animals graze on other people's property. So by you having such an animal in the house, you're basically having a thief in your house. and we're going in, we're paying him a visit, and meanwhile he's got a robber in his house. The Gemara says is that after doing a soul searching, a cheshbon hanefesh, they found that this is the only sin that this particular chassid had in his life. Meaning, mind you, the whole story started by describing him as a chassid. He was obviously someone who was super meticulous in terms of performance of mitzvos, avoiding averas. The Gemara says this is it. This is pretty much the only avera that he had on his checkbook. And he says at the time of his death, he knows that this is the only thing that he has on record which he could say is something that he did wrong. There is a major discussion. It's something which really deserves its shir in of itself, meaning his health condition. Was it a cholesh yesh bo sakana? Was it a cholesh ein bo sakana? If you say it's a cholesh ein bo sakana, it's not a life-threatening illness that he had, the story makes a lot more sense, because then he didn't need the goat, and the goat wasn't there in order for him to preserve his life. And so then the story is a little bit easier. But if you say it's a cholesh yesh bo sakana, I mean, the Gemara does describe it as some sort of heart condition. So if it's a chol sheish bo sakana, the story then becomes much more difficult to understand, because then, generally speaking, we say that you can violate Isurim in order to save your life. You can violate Isuri Torah, you can violate Shabbos, you can violate almost any Isur in the Torah in order to save your life. So that makes this story even more difficult to understand, and then this becomes a discussion in of itself. If we're talking about a chol sheish bo sakana, what's the avera in him having the goat? Okay, I leave it off there. There's much more to discuss on that topic. Let's continue in the Gemara. Am Rabbi Shmuel Mibale Batim Shebegala Halyon Hayu Beis Abba. The Rabbi Shmuel goes on to report that the homeowners up in the north. So my father was one of them. Umibne Macharvu. And why was it destroyed? Why was the community destroyed? Chayu Marin Bechorshin. So one of the things they did is they allowed their animals to graze in the forest. Now, we learned together in the Mishnah, that's okay. So we'll come back to that. V'danin dinim mamonos biyachid. And also, when they adjudicated, so they did monetary cases with only one judge. Now, assuming that the judge is a mumcha, that would be fine. Nevertheless, it should be avoided. Should not have one judge presiding over a monetary case. Monetary cases should be judged by three. See the third parak of Sanhedrin for more on that topic. We're going to get there, I will say, soon enough, but it's not that soon. Anyway, now, it's true that the forests where they raised the animals were proximate to their house. Nevertheless, there were private properties that were between other people's properties that were between the forest and their house. And in order to get the animals from the forest to their house, or for them to get from their house to the forest, they're passing over other people's properties. And so therefore, even though technically raising the animals in the forest is fine, but that's only when there's no other people's properties there. Once there are other people's properties over there, so then it's going to be prohibited. Tanur Rabban, the Gemara quotes a brisa. Ro'isha asa tshuva. It's a beautiful braisa. The braisa over here talks about tshuva. Meaning there's a guy who has made a collection of small animals in Eretz Yisrael. And, did not originally have the proper regard for Chachmei Yisrael and the Gzeros and Tekanos of Chachmei Yisrael. And then he said, you know what? I've been wrong. I've been in the wrong all these years. I would like to come clean. But it's hard. It's difficult for somebody to just give up his entire lifestyle and consider the fact that he had a lot of animals. So the Bryce over here, with that sensitivity of somebody who is going to become a Baal Tshuva, but is going to have to really make some wholesale changes in his life. So the Bryce over here describes, it is not necessary for him to give up his entire flock immediately. But rather, the Bryce says, he can go at it and sell off his animals a little bit at a time. The Braisa describes Tanu Rabbanan Rosh Asa Tshuva Ein Mechayv Nosel Mekor Miyad. He is not required to sell off all of his animals in one shot. Ela Mocher Al Yad Al Yad. He could sell off the animals one at a time. V'chein Ger Shenafalo Kolavim V'chazim B'Yerushaso. And the Gemara gives a Braisa here, gives another example. Let's say you're a convert. Your parents are not Jewish. They had a herd of pigs. And the parents died, and now this convert just received as a Yerusha all these pigs. Now again, we learned together in the Mishnah, you're not allowed to raise pigs. And that is not specific to Eretz Yisrael. That applies everywhere. So once again, the Braisa is speaking to the sensitivity of, there's no expectation that this is his estate. There's no expectation that he's going to have to sell everything immediately. Ein mechayven oso limkor miyad, ela mocher al yad al yad. So again, that sensitivity of, it's unfair to expect them to just simply get rid of everything immediately. V'chein, mishenad likach bais v'likach isha be'eretz Yisrael. Let's say a person tried to encourage himself, and he said, look, enough of me living outside of Eretz Yisrael. Yes, I'm speaking to myself right now. Enough of living outside of Eretz Yisrael. Enough of not being married. I'm going to make a neder that I'm going to move to Eretz Yisrael, and I'm going to get married. Now, in terms of the acquisition of real estate, and in terms of the finding of a spouse, these are the kinds of things where you shouldn't rush into these decisions. You should be meticulous in both of these in both of these acquisitions. Again, that expectation where you don't have to, even though you're bound by your own neder, you're not forced to buy the first piece of property you find in Eretz Yisrael, and you're not forced to marry the first girl you meet in Eretz Yisrael or wherever you may be. In other words, even though you're bound by a neder, and even though you want to fulfill your neder right away, but these are the kinds of things where you should be a little bit thorough and have due diligence on both of these proposals. And there's a story with a woman who her son was pestering her. The cuffs of an ishbas called Misha Yavo Eini Machzeriso. And so she says, enough already. Okay, my son's giving me this business about getting married. Fine. First one who comes in. The cuffs Allah Bnei Adam Shena Muganim. And so this woman now basically put an ad out saying, okay, I'm going to get married, and whoever walks into my house, okay? And then a lot of inappropriate people walked into her house. And the matter came to the Chachamim, and the question became, look, she basically made a declarative statement that she's going to marry whomever. So the Chachamim said, that's not the intent. Her intent was somewhat appropriate, but she basically, again, tried to motivate herself, but there's no expectation that she needs to step right into the next marriage. K'shem shamra megalen behema daka, k'chamra megalen chaya daka. The Braisa goes on, just like you're not allowed to raise small animals in Eretz Yisrael, you're also not allowed to raise chaya daka, the small undomesticated animals. Rabbi Shmuel Omer Megalin Klavim Kofrim. Rabbi Shmuel says, here's the things that you're allowed to have in your house. You're allowed to have dogs. Klavim Kofrim. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi gives a description. Ketanim Venanasim. Rashi says small dogs. Ananas in the Gemara is a midget. So small dogs you're allowed to have. Rashi Lishna Achrina Klavim Gedolim. Sheltzayadim Ve'in Mazikin. Or well-behaved dogs. They can be big, but they can help you hunt, but they got to be well-behaved dogs. So this is the Gemara that allows for dog ownership. V'chatulim. And also you're allowed to have cats. V'kufin. You're allowed to have a monk in your house. I'm not sure how recommended it is, but the Gemara allows it. V'chuldo sanayim. You're allowed to have these. It's a kind of weasel. I don't really know how well to describe it. But anyway, they Rashi says they're called chuldos sanaim because they grow in this snet. The kind of weasels that grow in the bushes. Now all these animals are good because they clean out the house. When I say clean out the house, I mean really extermination. Meaning well, the Gemara in just a moment is going to make some differentiation in cats, in the world of cats. So my chuldos anaim, the Gemara says, a better description of the weasels, Amar Rav Yehuda, shartza chartza. Okay. A better description of the weasels. Doesn't help me much, to be honest with you. Rashi and Tosfos both describe the terminology over here, the linguistics, basically short leg types of weasels. Okay. The Ika de Amri, Charza de Ktina Shakya. Again, the same basic idea, like short thighs. Okay, they're short leg types of weasels. I don't know. That's kind of like a ferret. Okay, Viraya Beni Vardina, they're between the thorns. Umaishar de Mitasai Shakya. And the Gemara says and they have very short legs. Amrav Asino Atzmen Babava Ke Eretz Yisrael Behemadaka. Okay. Rav Yehuda Amarav says the following. Now, remember, and this is going to become important for a good part of today's daf, and that is Rav moved from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. Meaning Rav originally, the beginning of his life, so he grew up, he studied Torah in Eretz Yisrael. Remember, he studied under Rav Yehuda Anasi, his uncle was Rav Chia, meaning Rav started off his life in Eretz Yisrael, and then ultimately he comes to Bavel. Right, we're somewhere in the end of the second century, beginning of the third century, and in doing so, so he brings some of the minhagim of Eretz Yisrael into Bavel, and here's a wonderful example. He said that we in Bavel now are going to treat ourselves like in Eretz Yisrael, just like the Chachamim in a ban of not raising small animals in Eretz Yisrael. So Rav says the same thing is now going to be true in Bavel. You're not allowed to raise small animals in Bavel. Again, the issue is these animals end up. Their nature is to graze on other people's properties. So in order to stop the Geneva and stop the Gzela, so he extended the ban to Eretz Yisrael. Amle Ravada Barva Larav Huna did Chamai. So it's an extension. It's an extension of Gzera. So and Rav apparently had the power to do so. Okay, but yes, it's certainly interesting. So the now, Rav Adar Bar Ava turns to Rav Huna and says, what are you going to do with your animal? Rav Huna was a student to Rav. Amar lai didan kamintar luhu. Chova. So Rav Huna's response is, my wife is taking care of it. Chova, it's an interesting name for a woman, but that was the wife of Rav Huna. So Rav Huna says, my wife is going to be taking care of the animal. You need not worry. Amar lai chova tikbern livna. So Rav Adar Bar Ava comes back with a response that is extraordinarily harsh. And he says, Chova is going to bury her sons. Meaning that he didn't mean it as a curse. This is the way Tosfos understands it. He didn't mean to say it as a curse. He simply meant it's impossible to make sure that that animal doesn't get out, doesn't graze on other people's property. I do not think that you are making a wise and prudent decision, having your wife the responsibility of watching over the animal. And I do think that she is going to, you and her are going to be punished as a result of having this animal in your house. That's all what he meant. But even though that's all what he meant, but that's not what he said. What he said is that Chova is going to bury her children. And it's right. Tosfos uses the language of kishkaga hayotze mipnei ashalit. In other words, you got to be careful about what you say. What you say has ramifications, and so he shouldn't have said it. Kule shnei de Rav Adar Bar Ava loikai mazara leRav Huna mechova. And all the years that Rav Adar Bar Ava was alive, and he issued this curse, that even though it was unintentional, all the years that Rav Adar Bar Ava was alive, Rav Huna did not have children successfully coming out from his wife Chova. Sounds like from the Gemara that Rav Huna may have had other wives, but one way or another, the point the Gemara is making is you got to be careful about what you say. Another version is that Rav Huna said that Rav issued a declaration that the gzera in Eretz Yisrael of not raising small animals extends to Bavel. Mechiasa Rav LaBavel. From the time that Rav came into Eretz Yisrael, as I described a couple moments earlier. Okay, next story. Yeah, right. Chickens. The issue with chickens is that they're tuma carriers. So in Bavel, right? In Bavel, exactly. So in Bavel, you don't have that issue. Rav Shmuel v'Ravasi iklu lebei shavua haben. So we have three Amoraim, Rav, Shmuel, and Ravasi, who went to a shavua haben. It's an interesting description. It's an interesting Rashi. Shavua haben, bris milah. The term that the Gemara uses for Bris Mila Shavua Ben, Rashi goes on to explain, Al Shem She'avru Alav Shevas Yamin. Because to get to a Bris Mila, so you need to go a week from the time of birth to the time of the Bris Mila. So it's called a Shavua HaBen. Obviously, it's a full week, then the Bris Mila. The Ikad Amri, I'm sorry, Vi Amri La Leben Yeshua HaBen. Or some describe it as what's called the Yeshua HaBen. Again, if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi describes, Misha Sha'osin LePidyon HaBen B'chor Yeshua Metargaminan Porkan Kamo Pidyon. So Rashi describes it as the Yeshua HaBen, as the Pidyon HaBen, because that's the time when you're redeeming the son. Right? Salvation / redemption. In this case, we mean it literally. You are redeeming your son, so that's another version of what they were going into. There's a very interesting Tosfos over here, the very bottom of the Amud. He quotes Rabbeinu Tam, it's only two lines of Tosfos. Rabbeinu Tam Pirsh, it's the end of the first line. Shenolad sham ben v'al shem shahavlad no shah v'nimlat me'me imo k'dichsi v'himli tazachar nakalosh and Yeshua v'hayu regil la'aso se'uda. Rabbeinu Tam says that the term Yeshua Ben is a description of a party that was made on account of a child being born. Meaning not specific to the Bris Mila, but just simply because the baby was saved from the Rechem Imo, the uterus of his mother. And so therefore you have a party. Some suggest that this Rabbeinu Tam may be one of the basis of our minug of having a Shalom Zachar, right? The Friday night after the birth of a child. The minhag is the birth of a son, but the Friday night afterwards there's a party, right? A small celebration that's had, right? It's minhag Ashkenaz to have a shalom zachar. Could be that this Rabbeinu Tam is the source for that. Although again, Rabbeinu Tam doesn't give us much to work with in terms of how he's describing it. And if the issue is having a Yeshua, so then it shouldn't be specific to either a boy or to a girl. So I'm not sure if Rabbeinu Tam is the right address for this minhag, but certainly it's a good starting point. Okay, let's go back to Gemara. Our Gemara describes these three Amoraim coming in. Rav, Shmuel, and Ravasi, and they're going to some sort of celebration. You want to call it a bris, you want to call it a pidyon HaBen, you want to call it a shalom zachar. Either way. Here's the challenge. They had to get through the door. It's a small challenge. It's not... obviously, kavod is extraordinarily important. You have to make sure that you're walking in the door with your Rebbe. You're not going to walk in before your Rebbe. You're going to allow your Rebbe to walk in. Here becomes a problem. So Rav lo ayo kam into Shmuel. Rav wouldn't go in front of Shmuel. Now, Rav was the Rosh Hashiva. Shmuel was Rosh Hashiva as well. And Shmuel was the head of the community of Narda. But... And truth of the matter is that Shmuel should have allowed Rav to go in first, but Rav would refuse to go in before Shmuel. We'll explain why in just a moment. Shmuel la'ayo kamed Rav. Now Shmuel would not walk in before Rav, because again, Rav was the Rosh Hashiva. And Shmuel la'ayo kamed Ravasi. Shmuel wouldn't even go in front of Ravasi. Okay? And Ravasi la'ayo kamed Rav. And Ravasi would not walk in before Rav because Ravasi was a student of Rav. So you have now a classic, and I mean it literally, you have a classic impasse. Because now you have a doorway, the first person who should be walking through the door is Rav, but Rav won't walk in before Shmuel, for reasons we're about to articulate. And Shmuel in no way would walk in before neither Ravasi nor Rav, and Ravasi being a student of Rav, Ravasi wouldn't walk in before Rav. So we had a problem. No one's walking in the door. So Shmuel, right? So it's gridlock. So Shmuel ayo kamei derav, Ravasi lo ayo kamei derav. Amiman nitrach. So they said, who's going to be delayed? Meaning, who's the last one who's going to walk in? Nitrach Shmuel v'naisi Rav v'Ravasi. So Shmuel walk in and leave Rav and Ravasi outside. V'nitrach Rav or Ravasi. So... or Rav should be left out, or Ravasi should be left out. Meaning, it's gridlock. Who's gonna be left outside? So Rav milsa ba'amahu da'aveh l'Shmuel. So the Gemara over here points out Rav's behavior needs an explanation. Why wouldn't he walk in first? He was Rosh Hashiva. He understood that people will not walk in before him. So why wouldn't he walk in first? So Rav took upon himself as a personal conduct not to withhold kavod from Shmuel. Mishum da umaisa delacha adabre, I'm sorry, delacha adabre Rav aleha. And the Gemara over here just makes a quick reference to an incident in which Rav cursed Shmuel. Now, this incident is reported in the Gemara in Shabbos. If you take a look at Rashi over here, Rashi gives a very short description of what's going on. Shmuel cut in Meshibakulan Haya. Rashi points out that Shmuel was the smallest of them. Obviously, it's Rashi speaking in relative terms. V'zesh ein Rav nechnas lafan of tivusa v'yikara hu. The fact that Rav did not go in first and wait to Shmuel is honor that Rav took upon himself to get to Shmuel. Deka avad le mishum maisa delacha l'shmuel. There was an incident where Rav cursed Shmuel. Vishmona Shvatzim, Rashi says, if you want more of the details of that story, turn to the Perek in Shabbos, Shmona Shvatzim. Just as a quick synopsis, there, Shmuel, remember, he was the doctor. He was the resident doctor of the Babylonians. So Rav came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. Anytime you move geography, right, it takes time for your body to accommodate to the weather and to the water. And apparently Rav just had a terrible time with the Bavel diet. And so he was sick and he went to Shmuel, and basically Shmuel gave him a treatment that had Rav desperately needing to go to the bathroom. And Shmuel, in his prescription, did not want Rav to go to the bathroom. And so basically, for Rav's therapy, although he didn't explain it all to Rav, he basically caused him to have the runs, and it was a strange episode, it was a strange incident. Anyway, during the treatment, Rav cursed Shmuel, and told him he's not going to have any sons, and Shmuel did not have any sons. And from that point going forward, once he understood that Shmuel was doing it to help him, so from that point going forward, Rav took upon himself to always give the proper respect to Shmuel, even though Rav himself was the Rosh Hashiva. Okay, Ad Hachi, back to the Gemara, back to the story. Asa Shunra Kiti Aliyada Dianuka. There was a cat, and the cat had in his mouth the hand of a child. So Navag Rav Vidarish Chatum Mutar Lahargom. So at that point in time, Rav said, you know what? These cats are menaces. I know in Eretz Yisrael this is an issue to this very day. But he says, these cats are menaces. So therefore, Mutar Lahargom, you're allowed to kill the cat. V'asa L'kaimon, you're not allowed to keep a cat in your house. V'ein bo mishum gezel, and there's no problem with stealing cats, meaning I'm declaring cats ownerless. You want to steal them, that's fine. Ve'in ba misham hashav aveda. If you find a lost cat, there's no requirement to return them to the owner. Labalim ve'kevim da'amar mutar laharga mai niu su asa l'kaimo. Now, the Gemara points out, these statements of Rav seem to be a little bit redundant. Once you have permission to kill cats, there's a license to kill cats, so then what does it mean, asa l'kaimo? You're not allowed to keep them, obviously. Ma'u detem mutar laharga isur aleka. So I might have thought, yeah, if you encounter a cat, you can kill it, but there's no iser in holding onto a cat, kamash malan. So the chiddush is that you are not even allowed to raise them in your own home. Amr v'kevin damar de'en bo mishum gezel, mayniu su, en bo mishum hashav aveda, labalim. And again, it seems to be a little bit redundant. Once we know that you don't have to return it to its owner, so then, I'm sorry, once there's no prohibition of theft, so clearly you don't have to return to the owner. Amr ravina l'oro. So the Gemara says, well, I might have thought that, yes, the cat in of itself is something which you should dispose of, but maybe you should return it back to its owner because of the hide that it would present back to the owner. So for the Gemara says, for that also, there's no requirement to return it back to the owner. Okay. So anyway, so in terms of who ended up walking in first, the Gemara does not finish that thought, does not conclude that sentence. But the only reason why the Gemara presented the story here is because of the encounter with the cat. Mates for the Gemara challenges based on a price of Rishu Mangam Ben Elazar Omer Megalin Klav and Kufrim Vichatulim Vikovim Vicholdos Anayim Mimnesha Asuyin Lanakar Zabayis. The Gemara points out that we learned earlier this morning a brisa that taught us that you're allowed to have cats in your home. And Rav over here went ballistic on the cat and basically, you know, a death sentence to the entire cat community. And the Gemara wants to know, how do you understand Rav in light of the brisa that we learned? Lokasha Habuchma Habichivra. The Gemara says black cats versus white cats. And contrary to popular superstition, the black cat over here is good. It is the white cat, the Gemara says, which is the menace to society. And Maisa Dera, I'm sorry, Maisa Dera, Vuchma Hava. So the Gemara says, now the incident with Rav involved a black cat, and the Gemara's assumption is that the black cats are fine. So Hasamuchma bar Chivra Hava, the Gemara says, yeah, even though it was a black cat, but genealogically it really was a white cat. It comes from the white cat family, and it happens to be that this cat came out as a mutated black cat. But truth be told, is that really it's a white cat. Vahami bai bai la Ravina, debai Ravina, uchma bar Chivra mahu. So the Gemara says, now Ravina happened to have asked this question. If you have a black cat, but it really is a product of white cats, is this black cat now going to be under the penalty of death based on the enactment of Rav? And Ravina asked this question, Kikim abala la Ravina, b'uchma bar Chivra bar uchma, maise de Rav, uchma bar Chivra hava. So the Gemara says no. The incident with Rav, it's true the cat was a black cat, and in general black cats are fine. It happened to have been that particular black cat came from its parents were white cats, and its grandparents were white cats, meaning it's a white cat. Despite the fact of its color, it really is a white cat, and that's why Rav says exterminate it. But the question that Ravina asked was that genealogically the cat's a black cat. It just happens to be that somewhere in the generations, its parents were white cats, but if you go back, you'll find that really its grandparents or whatever, it's genealogically a black cat. That's the question that Ravina was asking. The Gemara doesn't punctuate that sentence as well. But in other words, what Rav was dealing with was something which was more fundamentally a white cat. Okay. Amar Rabbi Acha bar Papa Mishum Rabbi Abba bar Papa Mishum Rabbi Ada bar Papa. Sounds like we're finishing the Masechta. We have about another month to go. V'amri la'amar Rav Ada Abba bar Papa Mishum Rabbi Chia bar Papa Mishum Rabbi Acha bar Papa. V'amri la'amar Rav Abba bar Papa Mishum Rabbi Acha bar Papa Mishum Rabbi Chinina bar Papa. Okay, this may come down as the longest, name dropping before presenting halacha. Either way, masrin al hachichuch b'shabbos. If there is some sort of plague that is in the community, so you can make declarations on Shabbos, blow shofar, assemble in shul, have a fast, meaning you can have a community response to it, even though it's Shabbos, and even though Shabbos should not be the time that we're broadcasting Jewish pain, but for something as serious as this, so you can make an announcement on Shabbos. V'delz ha'nenelz lo b'meherati patach. Now, if the door is closing, it's not going to open that quickly. And the Gemara over here is saying this as an adage, as like a general, right? If you see an opportunity on its way out, so it's going to require super divine intervention for the door to open again. So basically, you can kiss the opportunity goodbye. Now, if you're buying property in Eretz Yisrael and it's a sale where you need to close on the deal, so you can write the contract even on Shabbos. Now, this takes us back to the Gemara in Gittin. We discussed this somewhere towards the beginning of the first parak of Gittin about writing sale documents on Shabbos for purchasing land in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara over here is going to also refresh our memory in terms of what exactly was talking about. Let's just do one or two more lines of Gemara, and then we'll finish, and then we'll pick it up tomorrow. Meisvei. The Gemara quotes a brayso. V'shar pronouns a misrakshos abaus al tzibur kagon chiku chaga zvuv tzira v'yitush v'shiluch nechashim v'akravim lahiyam atrim elat soaken. Any form of pestilence. Any wave of pestilence that comes into the community. So the Braisa says we cannot have a community-wide fasting, crying out to Kadosh Baruch Hu on Shabbos. Shabbos is simply not the time to have these type of community outpours to Kadosh Baruch Hu. And meanwhile, the Gemara is obviously bothered because we had a Masorah quoting a lot of Amorayim who says that we are allowed to do this for Chichuch. So the Gemara says, Lokasha kan balach kan biyavesh. So the Gemara says we're going to make the following distinction, wet versus dry. Meaning if it's a type of shchin, if it's a type of boil that has an abscess and it's wet, so the Gemara says that's bad but not devastating. If it's something where it's yavish, where it's dry, so then that's the type of boil where it's devastating. And therefore, it requires emergency meetings even on Shabbos. The Amr Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Shchinche Evikash Baruch Hu Mitzrayim Lachmi Bachutz VeYabesh VeYabesh MeBifnim. And the worst shchin known to man, meaning one of the 10 makos that were inflicted on the Egyptians. So yes, there was some sort of liquid, there was some sort of pus, but Yavish MeBifnim, but it was dry on the inside. Shenemar VeYishchin Avavaos Parech BaAdam UvaBehema. So the Gemara quotes the pasuk in Parshas Ve'era. It was a type of shchin that was devastating. That was part of the ten makos. So the Gemara says that's the kind of thing where, if God forbid, it happened to the Jewish community, so they can assemble on Shabbos and cry out on Shabbos, even though Shabbos is not really the appropriate time to do so. Okay, we'll pause over now. Pick it up tomorrow. A couple more issues to discuss in terms of finishing up our topic, and then tomorrow the Ten Tanaim of Yoshua. Okay, the popular Gemara, famous Gemara, describing what Yoshua enacted so that we can live in Eretz Yisrael.